This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
So I hope you liked our new intro there. This is the Saxo Market Call. It is Tuesday, 6th of April, 2021. And while we are away on our nice long Danish Easter holiday, we've had quite a lot of goings on in the market, to say the least. The U.S. equity market exploding to new highs in the case of the S&P 500 index, at least. You can see that on slide two. If you're living under a rock, of course, it's exploded above the 4,000 level and a nice 1.5% gain yesterday. And Europe, as we noted in our last podcast last week, was really in a good place. Even before the U.S. Advance here over the last several sessions. And so what's the driver here in your mind, Peter? I have a couple of thoughts on that, but just to avoid a long monologue here, take us through why you think the market is so enthusiastic and has moved to these levels here.
Yeah, it's a good question, because there's a lot of news coming out that the retail investors in the US and elsewhere is actually pulling out of the market. So you have market activity from that part of the market coming down quite dramatically over the past couple of months. So it's definitely not the retail that is pushing this market higher. And we had the Archegos debacle. But for now, the momentum seems strong. We had some of the best economic backdrop numbers, especially in the services sector, for two decades almost, I think, in the U.S.
Oh, yeah, it was a record number, the ISM services for March out yesterday, 63.7, and the new orders also record 67.2, and then of course on the inflation front, which we've been talking about quite a bit, prices paid up again, and it's 74. So yes, with some very strong numbers there. On top of that, non-farm payrolls last week, and then the gigantic jump in consumer confidence. So that whole story is in place, isn't it?
It is, and I think the vaccinations are just continuing. I think the what we can see in Israel is that this is the model. They have a fairly open society by now. Case numbers are running at, I think, a weekly average of 300. So we can see at Israel, as soon as the vaccines are rolled out across the major countries, we'll still have the mutations to worry about, but we will be out of the woods and the economy will be flying with all this stimulus. And we still have all these new stimulus programs coming from Biden. So we're off to a very good start, and momentum is strong. And it has been, as you can see here on slide three, it's been really much the mega caps here in the first week of trading that has been driving it. It's almost 4%. You have Alphabet, you have Apple and Facebook, etc. They're just pushing higher. But I have also put in a chart on DAX, because we have to mention that. I mean, the DAX index is up 10% in a very short amount of time here, and I'm wondering whether we could get a little bit of a setback. I mean, it's pretty aggressive, and I think a lot of it has been driven by a repricing of Volkswagen, BMW, and Daimler, and we'll talk about Tesla later into this podcast. But for now, just have DAX on the watch list for a potential pullback here.
And important to point out, not everything is coming up roses. We had a pretty weak session out in Asia overnight. I think a lot of that driven by this news out of China that they're not looking to expand credit for now. I think and part of this is the incoming stimulus in the U.S. They all know that this another huge round of stimulus checks, et cetera, will drive considerable demand in China. But I suppose that's the and you put up a chart here on slide four, Peter, showing that this, the limited credit from out of China, and the certainly in the mainland Chinese index, the technicals are looking pretty ugly.
Yeah, I agree with your view there, John. And I think the Chinese policymakers are very much aware of that they are an exporting economy, and they're exporting into the U.S. So obviously, U.S. stimulus is positive to China. So I think they are in wait and see mode and see how that trickles through the economy. But they don't like they have a lot of focus on the real estate market and the loan growth. So they curbing that, but also for good reasons. There have been a lot of loan growth, as you can see on this chart here. The orange line is basically the market value of the four largest banks in China scaled with their aggregate balance sheet of assets. And as you can see, this line is going down. So they've been pumping out a lot of loans and assets into the economy, but the equity market in China is not really buying that these are high high quality assets. So they have very much focused on this and bubble risk. But I think they focus on that instead of the narrative that it's actually the U.S. stimulus that will drive a positive story in China. I don't think that's really what you want to portray to the population.
Right. Okay. We have Althea on the call and Ola as well. We'll get to you in turn. But Althea, we really need to talk the shape of the U.S. Treasury yield curve and how U.S. Treasuries have been reacting to some of this really strong data we've just talked about. I mean, you have the very long end of the curve, sort of the yields have been tamed and even are towards the low end of last week in the case of the 30-year. But even the 5-year, we saw it reacting to the belly of the curve, the closer in yields, reacting quite strongly to the strong ISM services index I just noted yesterday, made a bid for that 100 basis point level, as you point out on your chart you put up on slide five. But then a pretty strong bid coming in even for these treasuries. And we've seen kind of a flattening in the yield curve, so 5 to 30s of about 20 basis points. What do you think is going on here in terms of the yield curve itself and what's next for treasuries? What is it saying about, what is the treasury market saying about this data?
Well, John, I think that first of all, we are coming out from a long weekend where worldwide we had Easter holidays. So I think that it's very important to understand where treasuries are going to go when the U.S. market is going to open today. But sentiments continues to be bearish. And I think that at this point in time, it is very important to monitor what is happening in the belly of the curve, especially the 5 years, because yesterday, the 5 year yield have gone very close to the pivotal 1%. And the thing is that if you see on slide number five, if yields break above 1% level, they will enter into a fast area until 1.4% with a weak support, like resistance line at 1.2%. So what is that telling us is that there is bearish sentiment for the strong data that came out last week and this week from the US. Bearish sentiment will continue and might be even deepened by tomorrow's FOMC minutes that are going to be released.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting to see what the yields are doing here. And if they're not making new highs, I think that's saying more than if they are. It's just a bit curious to me. We haven't seen more aggressive moves. And to me, might suggest that the market is suggesting that they really want to see the other side of the next few months, which are clearly going to be very strong in terms of the economic data. But if it's sustained, I guess, into Q3 and Q4. As far as the FX market is concerned, I'll get to you in a moment, Ulrich, because I think there's some really interesting things going on, and especially in metals. I think the fact that long end of the yield curve is tamed plus the strong risk sentiment is helping to feed a decent dollar consolidation. But we just haven't really broken anything yet in terms of this consolidation or rejected or negated this strong dollar move, as you can see on Eurodollar on slide six. Arguably, I think we really need to pull all the way back close to 120 to neutralize that most recent move to suggest we're back on the upside there. And then on the overview of the trends, you can see that the most notable thing is that the dollar momentum has faded quite strongly. Nothing to me really sticks out that much, except it's interesting to focus again in terms of dollar pairs on Aussie dollar. We had that rejection last week of the attempt at new lows, but the subsequent rally here has not been sufficient to really force the action back higher. And you can see the line I put there. I think you need to see 77.50 plus, again, similar to the euro dollar, to neutralize that most recent sell-off wave. Otherwise, if that one's headed back well below 76, we could be risking another leg of dollar strength. So Ola, we have a couple of interesting things. First of all, something we don't talk a lot about, but you've got a slide on uranium, but also the gold market has really staged a decent attempt at a recovery. I assume part of that is the whole yield story we've been talking about today.
Absolutely, John. And it is really, as you said, a lot of metal focus as we start this post-Easter period. I put in the uranium ETF UIA, which is basically tracking some of the major uranium companies. And we can see, as one said, wrote yesterday, it's basically uranium basically gone nuclear over the past few days here. We're back testing the highs from March, early March, at 2050. And it is a combination of expectations or speculation that Biden's carbon reduction efforts simply cannot be achieved without including nuclear or expanding nuclear capacity, production capacity. That's already a time where we're seeing an increased activity in Asia. China is building a lot of new nuclear power plants over the coming years. And also importantly for in Europe, there are some speculation that the EU is being advised that the potentially to look at nuclear power as a green as green energy. And if that's the case, then a lot of an additional investment flows would move into it, as we've seen with the whole ESG movements and the green focus over the last year. So it's definitely a sector to look out for. Just a word of caution, even though the market should break higher here, we are probably some of these companies are already pricing in uranium prices at a much higher level than the current level, around $30, potentially all the way up to $50. There are currently ample supplies, and we have to remember that building a nuclear power plant doesn't happen overnight. It takes at least 5 years, potentially even 10 years before it's operational. So that means that all the expectations for increased demand is not today. It's going to be in a few years' time. And currently, the market is oversupplied following a decade of overproduction, which also obviously led to the very weak price action we've seen. But definitely one we should keep an eye on. And then on the gold, you're absolutely right, John. We are stuck in the range here, but the forceful rejection below 1680 again last week has raised some hopes that this could be a double bottom, confirmed by a break above 1765. That could finally see some renewed demand for gold. Gold is desperately in need of demand. ETF flows has been negative now for quite a while. Hedge funds are holding the smallest position since 2019, and at the same time, with stock market still moving higher than the, it's lost 10% during the first quarter. So it is in need of a spark. I think that spark is still the inflation focus. Inflation, headline inflation, are simply not reflecting what's happening on the ground. Especially if you look at how some of these commodity price changes over the last year, they are phenomenal. And trying to get that lined up with a headline inflation of less than 2%, that's very difficult at this stage.
Yeah, and we have some key inflation data coming up later this week with the Chinese PPI. And speaking of China, you've got an interesting chart here on slide 8. I'll say looking at, well, it's actually just take us through, I won't preview it too much. Take us through what we're looking at here in terms of, you're suggesting there's a risk into the EMF because they've been loading up on dollar debt. Is that not right?
Yeah, so basically, like I'm looking at in slide 8 on the chart that you have on the left, I'm looking at the Bloomberg Barclays Aggregate Index, which is a bond, emerging market bond index with bonds in various currencies from emerging markets, but also including the euro and the US dollar. And what you can see is that in the fourth quarter of this year, all emerging market bonds in every single currency have provided a loss, except for the Chinese renminbi. So basically the take here is that we have been saying, John, several times that if inflation expectations are going to rise, then bond investors should try to create a buffer against rising inflation. And this buffer right now can be found in high-yield corporates, and it can also be provided by emerging markets. And probably the biggest diversification is going into local currencies compared versus the US dollars, for example. However, this didn't play nice since the beginning of the year for the simple reason that if there is a recovery is positive for the emerging market, there is a real danger for a policy mistake from the Fed. And this is something that the IMF warned with a report yesterday, saying that going forward, the emerging markets are in peril because they have issued a lot of debt in the past 5 years. And if we see any kind of policy mistake from the Federal Reserve, we might run into a scenario such as the taper tantrum in 2013.
All right. It's going to be interesting. And I assume those year-to-date returns, is that on their dollar bonds for these different countries?
No, they are not countries. These are year-to-date returns on bonds of various currencies. So you have a negative return for US dollar emerging market bonds.
Yes, yes. Okay, yeah. That's what I meant. Yeah, I was just because I was looking up the Thai baht when you were suggesting. I looked up a 10-year and it looked like it was about that loss. That's quite interesting. So a lot of that is the yield rise itself. And then if there was any spread widening, that would be on top of that. And you talked about junk, and you have talked about junk recently. I was just like pulling up my credit spread monitor this morning. It's incredible. You've just seen even further tightening of credit spreads. So not any sense of fear at all yet in the high risk corporate. And in general, if we look across financial market conditions, we neglected to mention earlier, Peter, we're seeing the VIX entering a new territory post pandemic here. So well below, I should say, 20 on the VIX. Complacency is quite at high levels. Any thoughts there? And round us out with the Tesla thoughts and earnings that are coming up.
Yeah, so it's we are below these 20 levels. We've been multiple times we've been banging those 20 levels and been hovering around that for the latter part of March. But now seems like we have significantly changed the structure in the both on the sorry on in the VIX, and as we've talked about before, long term equilibrium is around that 20 to 22 area ish. So it's with the current VIX curve and the current VIX level, it sort of induces energy into the momentum trades. So, you never know, John, when they snap back. But I think short term, at least technically, it supports the momentum trade. As we've said, just be a little bit cautious, especially in the DAX index. And fast forward to Tesla, as you said, they reported Q1 deliveries while we were at on Easter holiday, and I've been really been after Tesla for some while, and that's because of the rising competition. I think is really at odds with the current valuations of the company. But I will take my hat off to their their numbers from Q1. So they delivered 180,000, and they had a huge uptake in their Model Y in China, which there was a lot of uncertainty around. So that's really good. I don't think it changes the fact that the company's free cash flow generation relative to the valuation is still very stretched given the competition. So I think this is a nice short-term boost to the share price. It takes out a lot of the downside risk, at least immediate here. And for the rest of the year, it's the story of Tesla will be the story of rising competition across the board. And just finally, before we go to the macro calendar, John, just want to highlight that the earnings season the Q1 earnings season, I should say, is coming up next week. There are no really material earnings this week. So for next week, it's all about major US banks and Delta Airlines and Teladoc Health. But we'll be talking more about that on Monday.
Yes, and not much to add on macro. Again, we have the FOMC minutes up on Wednesday, as Altea mentioned, the ECB minutes on Thursday, and then the Chinese PPI is the one to watch as a key global inflation gauge. That's not up until Friday. Today, it's been a long one, so we'll cut it here, and we'll be back tomorrow, of course, with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.